My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Celebrate the end of your workday with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as another busy Thursday flies by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Moss Show, where we talk about the decentralized revolution, how the world is changing right before our very eyes, of course, as we look at it through the lens of politics, finance, and technology, and the technology being, of course, Bitcoin and the decentralized technology. There is a lot going on in the world every week. It's making my job easy. There's always so much to talk to. And this week, specifically in the finance space, more specifically in the crypto space, we have, I guess, for lack of a better word, it is blowing up. I'm joined in the studio with Joe Consorti, a friend and somebody who helps me with my research, by the way. Shout out to Joe. Follow him on Twitter, at Joe Consorti. He does great work. And Joe, welcome to the show. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me on. Yeah, no, most definitely. Excited to chat.
Man, it's always good to chat. You know, you help me out so much with a lot of the research that I'm doing on my YouTube channel, which, by the way, just this morning we broke the 400,000 subscriber mark. So pretty excited about that. If you're not following me on YouTube, you should just check it out, Mark Moss on YouTube. Joe helps me a lot out over there. But Joe, big news this week. To frame this up just a little bit, I covered it quite a bit. The crypto industry and Bitcoin took a massive hit when Terra Luna blew up. And Terra Luna blew up, and then we saw the trickle-down effect from that, the domino effect, if you will, and then, you know, Celsius went down, and Three Arrows Capital went down, and, you know, who knows what else went down. FTX came to be the savior. They came to be the Federal Reserve, if you will, to backstop all of these institutions. I pulled a couple things here. In May, SBF, he said, or May said that the leader, as he was bailing out the exchanges, said that some of these exchanges are already secretly insolvent, he said. Some of them were too far gone. Then he went to say the month after in July that they have up to $2 billion for further bailouts if they need it. And then in October, just a couple weeks ago, October 26th, he said that no more bailouts. He clarified the company will no longer pursue bailout type acquisitions, and they were actually looking to raise money at a $32 billion valuation just a couple of weeks ago. My, how quickly things change, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think Celsius really did act as that de facto lender, or not Celsius rather, but FTX acted like that de facto lender of last resort, similar to the Federal Reserve and our own financial institutions. But really, and I was speaking with Dylan LeClaire about this, it seems like a lot of it was, you know, a peacock flaring out its feathers before, you know, it gets pounced on by a predator. Really, it seems like in hindsight, that quote that you said, a lot of these exchanges are secretly insolvent, you know, it reads more now like an ominous warning about FTX than, you know, right. It did. Obviously, it was addressing other exchanges at the time. And it seems like in a poetic irony sort of way, in a twist of fate, FTX has now overextended themselves. And they found themselves in a precarious capital position, and Binance pounced on it.
You know, I want to talk about this, and then we'll talk about it from a wider standpoint back into kind of what we're seeing in the traditional financial space as well with countries doing this. We won't dig into it, but really this kind of got put onto my radar with the famous Black Wednesday when George Soros famously broke the peg of the Bank of England. And going into the Terra Luna, I would say that all pegs are meant to be broken. Traders, as long as traders are going to trade, they're going to do what they're going to do. They're always going to try to break these pegs. But I'm curious... you know, with the SBF thing, the FTX thing, I should say, Sam Bankman-Fried, for those listening, he's the CEO, the founder of FTX. You said that maybe he was secretly warning about himself being insolvent. Maybe he overextended himself to kind of what you just said about trying to protect all these other exchanges. But do you think that's really what it was? Or was it that he was using something fake and made up? And as long as the public thought it had value, he was able to use it, but it was when the public decided it no longer had value, then he just wasn't able to use it. So it wasn't so much about being overextended as it was to he was living on borrowed time, living in an imaginary world. And when that imaginary world ended, his game ended.
That's precisely right. On both FTX's and Alameda's balance sheet, a lot of what they were borrowing against, a lot of the assets that they held that they were borrowing against was FTT. Now, exactly as you said.
So you're deep in the weeds on this, Joe. You've been talking about this extensively. Let's back it up a little bit for those just tuning in, and let's kind of frame this up a little bit. So FTX and Alameda, what is that? What's the relationship there?
Yes. So FTX is the second largest cryptocurrency exchange in the world globally. And Alameda Research was co-founded by the same CEO, right? So basically, same owner, same CEO of both firms. Alameda Research is a prop trading desk, so they engage in crypto trading, and FTX is an exchange. So even though they aren't the same company, they're essentially tied at the hip, right? So for my entire analysis, I've essentially considered them one and the same because of how closely intertwined they have been. And their activity over the last few days just serves to prove that.
Right. So FTX is the crypto exchange, the crypto casino. You can go on there. You can buy all your different crypto tokens that you want, your Solanas, your Ethereums, whatever, exchange your Bitcoin for whatever you want. And then Alameda was a sister company that he created to then invest into these types of crypto projects. So if I frame that up right. And fun fact, I used to write a cryptocurrency research newsletter. I don't anymore. I hate to dox him, but my ex-business partner, who I decided not to work with anymore, and we knew Sam Bankman-Fried from back in the day before he went on to do all this stuff, and he reached out to him and said, hey, you know, what new crypto projects do you think we need for Solana? And SBF said, hey, if we had this type of a product, I'm not going to oust the whole thing, then that would be something that would probably be beneficial for the market. And he said, great, if I build it, will you list it? And he said, well, if you can get Alameda to back it, then I will. And he's like, well, can you set up a meeting with Alameda? Sure, no problem. Set up a meeting with Alameda. They said, sure, if you build it, we'll buy it. I think less than like 6 months from start to finish, he had like hired a couple of people off Upwork, launched the token, cashed out a big chunk of money from Alameda. They took a huge chunk of tokens from them, right? That's what they do, which is relevant because now let's talk about what's on their books, and one of which is a whole bunch of tokens that are probably worth nothing. So now that we've kind of framed up these two entities, so dig into how they were using this and kind of how we found the emperor has no clothes, I guess.
Of course. So essentially the way that Alameda was borrowing was through what's called a flywheel scheme. Now, essentially what a flywheel scheme is, FTX was responsible for creating this essentially worthless token, this internally printed out of nowhere token, but it was ascribed value, right? You know, FTX sold it on the open market on its exchange, and then users would buy it. And then through having this FTT token, they'd be able to go off on the exchange and buy things at a discount. They'd be, you know, instead of having larger transaction fees, basically owning this token would allow them to have smaller transaction fees. Good. So essentially, FTX created a market out of nowhere for a feature. They created a security out of it. And then as a result of liquidity being pumped into this security, they were able to borrow against that security, right? And then you can borrow against your security. You go ahead and mark those on your books. You say, wow, take a look at this, we've grown. You issue more of that security, and it's essentially, you're creating something out of nothing and then backing it with yourself, backing it with your cash flowing business, and encouraging customers to purchase this for a normal feature that you could include on your site anyways. And essentially it's creating this value out of nothing, which is allowing FTX and its sister company, Alameda, to load a lot of this onto its balance sheet and then borrow against it, right? So it's essentially borrowing against this vaporware token. That's what we've seen come home to roost. We'll talk about what occurred with Binance, but essentially the moment that the veil started to slip and the balance sheet leaked and people started publicly realizing that essentially the entire, you know, the net equity of this firm is essentially backed by nothing. That's when this liquidity began to unravel.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is a micro look at how the overall financial system works. So I want to break all that down. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're sitting down with Joe Consorti. We're talking about the blow up in the crypto space with FTX, Binance, what happened. We're breaking down the play-by-play. But like I said, I really want to kind of get into what this means for the greater financial system, the risks that we have. We got a whole lot to cover when we come back. Don't go away. We're going to be right back.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Leesa and home design favorite West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of these two companies' shared values: premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary. Indulges your senses and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Leesa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit leesa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.
All right, welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. Of course, we're talking about the decentralized revolution. We're talking about Bitcoin, and we're talking about the cryptocurrency space right now that is absolutely blowing up this week with big news of the maybe the first and second largest crypto exchanges battling out. I'm in the studio with Joe Consorti. Joe, before the break, we framed it up, and we framed up how really kind of FTX and Alameda are kind of sister companies doing different things. But they're both backed by something they created out of nothing. Now, you know, I guess I say all value is subjective. So everything's kind of created out of nothing. And then the market prescribes value to it, like you said. I remember when I was a kid, there was like these Beanie Babies, and they you can go like to the tulip mania, right? It's all of a sudden everyone just thinks these tulips are super valuable, but then the value just disappears. And so they created these FTT tokens out of thin air. And then to the point you made, right, the market prescribed value to them. The problem is that they were just holding that, and that was this big asset on their books. Now, you did say that they were leveraging it, borrowing against it, et cetera. But even as much as they borrowed it and leveraged against it, they didn't really still have any other real world assets, it didn't seem like.
That's exactly right. So if you take a look at the other assets that they had on their books, it's basically a hodgepodge of nameless and very, very illiquid other cryptocurrencies. I could rattle off the list all the live long day, but none of your listeners, you or I, would know what they are. Essentially, what Alameda and FTX were engaging in was, this rapid selling of all it will, you know, this ownership of all of these relatively unknown coins with very, very, very small markets. They practically own the market. And so, you know, they were caught in this situation where they're basically owning every worthless thing under the sun that you could possibly imagine, and then having to sell it onto the open market for dollars. And, they're the most recent, victim of this global dollar shortage that we're facing. And unfortunately, they were caught holding the steaming pile of worthlessness.
Yeah, I think I tweeted on somebody, I replied on, I think it was Corey Clipston's tweet, I just said, you know, it's back to this Warren Buffett thing, which is a rising tide lifts all boats. And he looked like this genius because he used massive amounts of leverage at a time when the tide was rising. It made him look like a genius because he took way more risk than everybody else through massive amounts of leverage, as well as all kinds of financial engineering, if you will. Fraud, if we might even go out that far to say that. But then, as the second part of Buffett says, that when the tide goes out, you see you swimming naked. So he looked like a genius using all this financial engineering leverage going up. But then as soon as the tide pulls out, all of a sudden he is swimming naked. Now, it seems like it all really got started maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when I think Coinbase had broke an article, basically they got, I don't know, some sort of insider information showing what the assets actually were on their balance sheet.
Absolutely, yeah. So the entire impetus for this was CoinDesk actually leaking their balance sheet. And it was revealed that within this CoinDesk report, they had $14 billion worth of assets, right? Which is, you know, of course, that number in and of itself means virtually nothing, right? Alameda is a relatively small company. But then it was revealed that the majority of their assets, or actually the largest holding, not the majority, but the largest holding, individual holding that they had was FTT, right? This worthless token that was printed out of thin air. Which is, of course, backed by FTX's reputation. They had $3.5 billion of what was called unlocked FTT. They had $2.5 billion of FTT collateral, which leads us to believe that if it's called FTT collateral, they're probably borrowing against that. at least that $2.16 billion portion, and then $292 million of locked FTT. Now, the reason this was concerning is because the entire free float market capitalization of FTT is less than $4 billion. At the time that this CoinDesk article was released, it was revealed that Alameda was holding more FTT on their books than was regularly in circulation. And so that's essentially the straw that broke the camel's back, if you will. And it really started to get these market participants scared of what they were holding and the solvency of Alameda and FTX.
Yeah. So the tide starts going out. All of a sudden you go, shoot, they're swimming naked. They don't have my money. And what happens is psychologically, most people haven't really taken the time to stop and think about this, but if I give my money to the bank or I give my money to an exchange, whether it's E-Trade, Charles Schwab, or FTX, there's a chance I maybe don't get my money back. And I think a lot of people willingly participate in Ponzi schemes. A lot of times people say, what do you mean Cardano's a scam? Like, look how much money I've made. Well, people make money in Ponzi schemes. The game is, can I get in and ride it up and get out before everybody else tries to get out? Because we know that there's no money. And I think, you know, once people saw this number and went, oh, shoot, they don't have enough money, then the smart people start getting out. And then everybody starts rushing for the exits. And it just really started to go down. So that started happening. I looked at the chart. I didn't actually try to coordinate the plunge of FTT. It looked like it really kind of started over the weekend on Sunday, I guess, right? Where the CoinDesk article, when did that come out? That was November 2nd. So it looked like it kind of held on a couple days, but who knows how much they were defending that peg. So talk about that. So then that article comes out. It starts casting doubt. Then I guess CZ, who's the founder of Binance, which I think is the largest cryptocurrency exchange, basically says, hey, we're holding a bunch of these tokens and we don't want them anymore. We're just going to go ahead and sell them. For whatever reason, we see they're a scam. We see there's no backing. We want to be the first ones out of the exit. Is that what really kind of took it to them?
That is what took it to them. If you take a look at the chart, a few days afterward, this was actually on the 6th, so 4 days after the CoinDesk article released and this fear started moving through markets, CZ, obviously the owner of the largest cryptocurrency exchange, came out and said, we hold $2.1 billion, USD equivalent, of FTT. We're going to sell it all. We plan on selling it all on the market. Due to the limited liquidity in the market, we're going to sell it over the next couple of weeks. And that sparked imminent panic. Essentially, you saw the price whip down and then whip back up. And then strangely, for the next 24 hours, roughly, until last evening, when the straw broke the camel's back, you saw essentially the price trying to move down and then getting defended at the $22 level. Mm-hmm. Now, why was this? Well, it seems like Alameda and FTX were engaging in currency defense. So they were essentially selling all of their assets in order to buy FTT and defend it. Now, why would you want to do something like that? Well, if you have a margin call level that's at or around 22, that's the kind of behavior that they were engaging in. We saw on chain, both Alameda and FTX were really selling everything that they had on their books that had a liquid market and flipping it into FTT. And as we saw, there was just too much sell pressure to contend with. On top of CZ, on top of the short sellers and the spot sellers, FTX in and of themselves didn't have enough liquidity in order to maintain this $22 peg. It eventually broke, and not a very pretty picture. It all really started with CoinDesk, and then CZ was the one who, exactly like you said, he said, "I'm out."
Yeah, I want to walk through what this means for CZ, because he had over $2 billion of the token. The market cap was almost $3 billion at the time. Today, the market cap is less, about $500 million or less. So we'll walk through that. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Mark Moss Show. I'm in studio with Joe Consorti, and we are trying to sort through the big mess, the big blow up in the cryptocurrency space of the largest crypto exchange, FTX, becoming insolvent, being taken over by its largest competitor. And what's really no better way to describe it as a speculative attack. We're going to break that down, and then I want to pivot into the greater financial system and show you how countries are basically doing the same thing, and you don't want to get caught off guard. Got a lot more to cover when we come back. Don't go away. I'll be right back.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Leesa and home design favorite West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of these two companies' shared values: premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary. Indulges your senses and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Leesa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit leesa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
All right, welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We are talking about right now the blow up in the cryptocurrency market, where FTX, the second largest cryptocurrency exchange, just got taken out by its biggest competitor, got taken over. I'm in the studio with Joe Consorti. Joe, when we were just before we went to break, we were talking about how, or you had said that CZ had put out this tweet. Let's talk about why he put that tweet out. But what he said in the tweet was, as you already said, right, we have over $2 billion of this token and we want to get rid of it. We're going to do it orderly. So what happens is, for people that don't know, when you're doing a big purchase or sell, a lot of times you want to do that over the counter, meaning it's off the market. Because if you do a big buy or you do a big sell where people see it, it can move the price up or it could move the price down. And either way, typically you don't want that. It's what's known as slippage. So for example, if I wanted to buy $1 million worth of a certain token that had thin liquidity, if I bought $1 million of Bitcoin, it probably wouldn't matter so much. But you buy $1 million off a token that has thin liquidity, the price will start going up. And so then that means I'm paying higher and higher and higher amounts. Likewise, if I have $1 million I want to sell, I also want to do that off the books because as I'm selling it, it pushes the price lower and lower and lower. And so typically you want to do that without telling people. In this case, he specifically told everybody what he's going to do. He told them in advance, which is really the opposite of what you'd want to do. So talk to us about why that happened, Joe. But then also, if he had over $2 billion and now it's at $500 million, Did he get attacked by, I mean, did he kind of crush himself? Did he get this slippage on the way down? I mean, what's your speculation there?
For sure. And I think the reason for this was, it was very cunning. It was very deliberate. I tend to think that this wasn't, if he was in the game, if he was selling his FTT in order to salvage it for its fair market value, he would have taken that over the counter deal to sell it all for $22, as Alameda Research CEO said. But CZ had absolutely no response to that. He had no response to that. And so through dumping all of this $2.1 billion worth of FTT onto the open market, he wanted that slippage. So what does that tell us? Well, it tells us that he wasn't selling this FTT in order to make a profit and turn it into dollars because he didn't want it on his books anymore. What he did was he saw that FTX, its second largest competitor, the second largest exchange in the world, was in a very fickle capital situation where it was holding this token that the public was increasingly seeing as worthless. And essentially, you know, they pounced, right? CZ saw it as the opportunity for a speculative attack to, rather than engaging in the over-the-counter deal, which would have less damaging effects on Alameda's balance sheet, on FTX's balance sheet, because we know that they hold a lot of this, he instead chose the path of maximum pain, right? So that's sort of why I tend to think that this is a deliberate move. And you saw exactly what occurred as a result of that. You know, essentially, FTX was like this wounded gazelle, and it was running away from, you know, the Binance, right?
Right.
And why on earth would Binance let this opportunity slip away? It was selling onto the open market so that it could make this token relatively worthless and push FTX and Alameda closer to margin calls.
Yeah, but what about the slippage? So, I mean, that's great. He attacked his opponent. He won. But he could have cost himself $1 billion. I mean, do we have any way to know through on-chain data how that worked out for him?
For sure, yeah. There are several hot wallet monitors. And throughout this entire process, CZ was actually actively tweeting that they have fine liquidity. Their liquidity is totally fine. When the market was solely focused on attacking FTT and shorts were piling in, the futures contracts, the short side of futures contracts, 20 million new short futures contracts opened up over the last 2 days alone. So CZ wasn't worried about his own liquidity. He actually tweeted during this event.
Well, not his own liquidity, but yeah. if he had $2 billion of that token, he wants his $2 billion in cash, yeah. But maybe he was only able to get $1 billion out of the $2 billion or something like that.
Right, exactly. And he obviously was, he is the beneficiary of that slippage, unfortunately. But since that is the case, it seems like he valued devaluing FTX's assets to a point that he could scoop them up and he could be the liquidity injection. Now he owns his biggest competitor. He valued that more than he did that, $1 billion that he lost to slippage.
Yeah. So, I mean, we don't know what he lost to slippage unless you have some way you've calculated that. But theoretically, I mean, he could have lost half. So he's basically gave up $1 billion to kill his competitor and absorb him?
Essentially. I mean, that's what we're seeing. Yeah. Obviously, this is a lot of second, third, and fourth order thinking. Yeah. And some people may call it conjecture. But if you take a look at the markets and you take a look at the aftermath of what all this, of how all of this unfolded, FTX essentially had a bank run because consumer confidence was dropping to such a point at the same time that it was buying basically the entire market of FTT. So, it couldn't last forever. They were in an incredibly fickle situation. You put two and two together, Binance was the one that acquired them. Some say it's conjecture, but it seems like it was deliberate based on what we've seen.
What's interesting is, I want to jump to more traditional financial stuff. I'm going to stick on this just for a little bit more. But, we look at China has massive holdings of U.S. treasuries, right? And then you see this, with the Russia-Ukraine war situation, and is China siding with Russia? And if they want to de-dollarize, and if Russia really, if China really wanted to stick it to the U.S., they could dump all the U.S. treasuries, sort of like what Binance just did to FTX. So they could dump all the U.S. treasuries, but then a lot of people would say, well, why would they want to do that? Because they would just shoot themselves in the foot. They would just wipe out their own holdings that they have as well. Which is a logical thought, but apparently Binance didn't care about that. So it's interesting. Maybe China wouldn't care about that either. And that's a whole different hypothetical, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. You're seeing the exact same behavior, and I'm sure we'll get into it from sovereigns around the world. I tweeted out a week or two ago, actually in the middle of October, so a little bit ago now, I said my themes for Q4 were fragility, rising fragility across global central banks, So the Bank of England, the Bank of Japan, they've had to intervene in their own bonds and FX because of the immense sell pressure we've seen, and intervention, right? And so ultimately these central banks come in and they backstop their own currencies and their own bonds. I didn't anticipate that we'd see this in the crypto space, but here we are. Ultimately, you know, these sort of animal kingdom dynamics, they proliferate across markets. And at the end of the day, a lot of what we're seeing here with FTX essentially stop hunting, with Binance stop hunting FTX and then coming in for the kill, that's a lot of what we're seeing in global markets too.
Yeah. Now, I know a lot of people have been saying, and they're afraid of what happens after this. Does this hurt the crypto industry even more? Does this cause regulators to come in and regulate things even more? You know, all kinds of questions like that. You know, from my opinion, of course, my always answer is no, we don't need more regulations. It's these types of things that will force people to become more disciplined and more resilient. To your point, you said your key theme was fragility. And when we get into these easy monetary systems, you had put out a tweet thread kind of talking about that, right? We're in this easy monetary system with zero bound rates and, you know, all this liquidity, and it causes all types of malinvestment and all types of bad investment and all types of risk. It's what we're seeing is more a symptom of that type of a system. Now, what happens is when you start seeing like, oh, shoot, we're actually in this free market and these guys could hunt my stops and could take me out, I maybe shouldn't be as risky. And maybe instead of being so fragile, I should make myself more resilient. And so, you know, if the regulators would just leave this alone, I think the trend would be to like, how about we not get so over our skis? I mean, you can look at, you know, Swan, for example, and they sell Bitcoin, but it's a Bitcoin exchange. They're not participating in these types of risky things, right? So they're not putting themselves into that danger. And we could see these types of companies do that. So unfortunately, we're seeing the people knocking at the door saying, oh, we need regulators. We need regulators, you know, come save us. In my opinion, that's the wrong way to go. But let's pivot now and talk about into the greater financial system, because as you already said, what we're seeing with the Bank of England, the gilt market's still having problems over there. Obviously, Bank of Japan is in a tough situation doing the exact same thing, selling treasuries, buying their currency to prop it back up, the same thing. So let's jump to that. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Mark Moss Show. We're talking about, of course, each and every week, the decentralized revolution. This week specifically, we are talking about what's blowing up in the crypto market, and that is the FTX exchange. I'm in the studio with Joe Consorti. He's a market analyst with the Bitcoin Layer. He also helps me out on the Mark Moss Show. We're going to be back and more talking about that financial system in a minute. Don't go away. You don't want to miss it. We'll be right back.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Leesa and home design favorite West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of these two companies' shared values: premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary. Indulges your senses and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Leesa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit leesa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, welcome back. You are tuned in to the Mark Moss Show, and I am in studio with Joe Consorti. We're talking about how the FTX exchange just got taken out, assassinated, hunted, chased down, hunted, and taken over by Binance. Maybe. We still don't know if Binance takes them over. They have a non-binding LOI. So this could be even more 4D chess to even just take them out even more. So we don't know if Binance is going to take them over, but they did put them down for the kill. But if we pivot out a little bit, Joe, unless you want to add to that, but if we pivot out a little bit, explain how Japan is basically kind of doing the exact same thing.
For sure. So Japan, since, you know, the 80s and 90s, they've historically been one of the worst sovereigns when it comes to fiscal and monetary policy. They have struggled to get inflation. They're a consistently deflationary environment. And really, the yen and Japanese government bonds are the laughing stocks of the world. And what we've seen in Japan has been systematic yield curve control, which is essentially the Bank of Japan becoming the marginal buyer, the buyer of last resort, of Japanese government bonds in order to pin yields. Because they've struggled with inflation to such a high degree, their idea is, okay, if we pin yields at a certain level, that'll encourage credit creation and that'll get us some inflation. And unfortunately, that hasn't worked for them for a very long time. But what it has done—
So let's break that down a little bit for everybody listening. So the Bank of Japan, they need money, so they need to borrow it, so they issue bonds. The problem is nobody wants to buy those bonds because they know that the Bank of Japan isn't really able to pay that back. So they have their Bank of Japan, the Central Bank of Japan, buys the debt of the government and funds them with money they're printing on their own, right? The problem is as they continue to print that money on their own, expand the monetary base, when you increase the money supply, the existing money buys less and less goods, which creates inflation. So prices go up. So they're printing the money, buying their own debt, but they have massive inflation. That basically sums it up, right?
That's exactly right. They've engaged in this, what's called debt monetization. So they buy their own government bonds. As a function of it, it floods the system of money. We saw that exact same kind of intervention with FTX and Binance. They became the marginal buyer of last resort, and now Japan has done the exact same thing. They've sold records amounts of their foreign exchange reserves, which is largely comprised of U.S. treasuries, which has pushed domestic United States yields higher and higher. And Japan has become the largest marginal buyer, right? So they are the ones, when times are tough, when liquidity is drying up, they're the individuals who buy their own Japanese government bonds. And actually, there are several reports out now that are estimating Japan owns the entirety of the off-the-run 10-year Japanese government bonds. So they own 100% of that market. So it's no longer an interest rate that's set by people buying and selling these bonds. It's now owned entirely by Japan. That's something we almost saw with FTX. If that intervention had continued, chances are they'd own the entire FTT market. But eventually somebody swooped in and helped them out and had a liquidity injection. But globally with Japan, they never have that issue. They can essentially print the difference. If they run out of liquidity to buy these bonds, they can create more of it. And so whereas with Binance, it was a matter of time. It was a clock that was running down. Because money can be created out of thin air from these central banks, it's an issue that will persist, right? It's an inflationary issue.
But the problem though is Japan is creating all their own money to buy their own bonds because nobody else wants to buy them. If nobody buys them, the rates of the bonds goes higher, so they're buying them to keep that down. The problem is as they do that, as I already said, their currency is crashing. So then they're buying their own currency to keep it propped up, just like FTX had to start buying their own token to keep it propping up. So many people were trying to sell it, get rid of the token if the price was going down. So they were buying it. And so Japan is doing the same thing. They're selling whatever they can, U.S. treasuries, to buy their own currency to keep it propped up, just like FTX did. Now, the thing is, though, to your point, is that FTX can't print their own money like Japan can. But that's not actually totally correct, maybe, right? Because they did. They created the FTT token out of thin air. They did.
Well, they did, but they can't print something like dollars or fiat, something that's deep and liquid.
Right. But what they can do is they can create their FTT token, and Japan can't create dollars, right? They can just print, they can create yen.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely.
So FTX could create as much FTT, potentially create more FTT tokens, but who wants them? Japan can create more yen, but who wants those?
That's right. And now Japan is in a situation where they, exactly like you said, they're now not just buying their treasuries, they're also buying the yen. And as you know, they pin yields on the treasury on these treasury securities from the Japanese government bonds, then the release valve is the yen. So as people see that, whoa, interest rates in Japan are extremely low, they're high in every other country, I'm going to sell the yen. So now Japan has been forced into a situation where they're creating all of this yen, and essentially that gets passed off to the citizens. Now, the key difference is FTX, they can create more FTT token, but there isn't necessarily a demand for that. It's not like there is an economy that is operating off of FTT. There is an economy that is operating off of the yen. So there's only so far that FTX can create their own token to solve their troubles, whereas because the entire country of Japan, anybody who holds Japanese government bonds or yen, they can absorb all that newly printed money. So the Bank of Japan has much more leeway to create money and buy its bonds and buy its currency than Binance did.
But the same constraints I believe are still there. It's a bigger constraint, a bigger net, but the same constraint is there, because back to kind of we talked about this, FTT token only had value because the market prescribed value to it. So same with the yen. To your point, yes, there's more people using it. The market's bigger. More people have assigned value to it. But if it continues to lose value, just like FTT token did, more and more people want to get rid of the yen and go to something else like a dollar. Just like people want to get rid of FTT token and go back to dollars or Bitcoin or whatever it is, people also will want to get out of the yen and go to the dollar or Bitcoin or something like that. So they have more room. The market's bigger. It's been around longer. It's more trusted. But at the end of the day, just like FTT crashing, people want to jump ship. If yen continues to crash against real assets, people will want to jump ship as well because they can't create the dollar.
That's exactly right. So what we saw with FTT and the essential complete loss in confidence and collapse of the currency, that's what we're seeing, but because the market's larger, to a slower degree in countries like Japan. Right. So essentially the situation that we've just viewed in the last 48 hours is a small sort of ant farm version of what we've been witnessing and will continue to witness in countries like Japan.
Yeah. Now, if we take this bigger, and let's go bigger, we only have a couple minutes left. If we go bigger, so Japan's having the problem. So FTT is a perfect, as you said, ant version of what Japan's doing, what Bank of England's doing, what all these countries are doing, because they can create more of their own currency, but not more dollars. But at the end of the day, the U.S. is also doing the same thing with the dollar, because again, we don't want dollars. We want goods and services. We want energy. We want food. And so the U.S. can keep printing more dollars, but they can't create more energy or food, which is what we ultimately want. And so if the U.S. does the same thing, it's bigger than Japan, but if they do the same thing, then ultimately, and the dollar continues to fall because they're going to be printing so much currency, people will just sell the dollar to go into oil, energy, natural gas, Bitcoin, something like that. It's the same thing, just bigger, right?
That's exactly right. Ultimately, people will seek to hold reality. They will seek to hold actual energy. What we're seeing in Europe right now is a good example of this. And this extends to the United States too. They're facing an energy crisis. They have a money printer. They can't print energy. They can print euros, devalues the euros, and buy energy for a certain period of time. But if that is your only solution, right? Ultimately, the people who hold that currency and the people who hold the United States dollar and other fiat currencies, they'll be looking for a representation of reality.
They're gonna go to the next best thing that they think has value or what holds value. I got to cut you off there because we are out of time. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. I'm in the studio with Joe Consorti. If you like what he has to say and you want to have him finish it, follow him on Twitter at Joe Consorti. We'll have it in the show notes down below. We're talking about the decentralized revolution. We're talking about how the FTT token and the FTX exchange is being taken down by Binance and how it's a small picture of what the world is going through. That's what I got. Thanks for listening today. Until next time.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.